You listen to the Shapeless Mass Podcast at podcast.shapelessmass.com. Aw, shit. Peace.
Are you ready, boys?
Yeah, braced and ready.
Here we go.
Do it.
If y'all really like to rock the funky beats, the king of the beats gonna rock the place.
Welcome to podcast number, let me call it like a magic computer, number 3.
Manos.
Today is July 14th, 2006. Wait. We should introduce our guest.
This is Void.
Vixid.
And then I am EBA, and over here is my man Sir Mildred Pierce.
I'm Sir Mildred Pierce.
Yes. Void is a good friend of mine, known him since middle school.
Hear him like when I crack my knuckles.
Is that what that was?
Yeah.
I thought somebody shot a gun.
Well, I've known Void since middle school, and
all because you were like heckling the teacher in history class. That was our first, you know,
yeah.
Like getting to know each other. She's like all going off about Georgia history or whatever. And this is where, what was his name, Oglethorpe?
Yeah, and this Oglethorpe is where Oglethorpe landed right here. He was skydiving
without a chute.
Yeah. I like Oglethorpe.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of it. It's some great chocolate milk.
Is it the name of a chocolate milk too?
No, it's Ovaltine.
Ah, yeah. Ovaltine, Oglethorpe.
You know, they're the same. It's Ovaltine.
Ovaltine.
You Ovaltines, don't you?
You're in a band with a really cool DJ. What's the name of the band?
The band is Youth at Risk.
Really? And Youth at Risk broke up at one time.
How about that?
Yeah. Any comments on the previous band you broke up with?
6 Hour.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, hopefully things will sort themselves out with the 6 Hour. And maybe a little bit of, you know, when we do the final concert deal with Youth at Risk and get that done. Maybe do a little bit of recording. I've been chewing on that a bit.
What, for Youth at Risk?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But the final concert thing, get that done and out of the way, then maybe I can make something happen with the remnants of the 6th Hour, because they're good guys, you know. And
you've been making music for
too long.
What, 20 something years?
I don't know.
Any highlights you would care to divulge, share, spill, drop?
Well, you know, of course, shows where, you know, you play
that
with
those badass DJ shows up.
He doesn't want me to tell him. That's what it is.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead. For those who didn't pick up, I'm actually the DJ for Youth at Risk.
How about that?
Wow.
Don't do drugs, kids. Just sell them. No, don't listen to me. Only if you have a nun disguise. All right. Highlights, man. There's so many killer things. We played a gazillion live shows, you know. Like, that first show back in the Martinez Community Center was
the one where the parts of the center actually got destroyed.
Not that one. That wasn't the first.
Oh, okay. That was the one diagnostic. I thought that was
was a good show.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was a packed crowd.
Until that point. Until they destroy the building.
The water fountain got ripped
That's
out
no
of the
good.
Wall.
Water's just flooding all through the place.
I'm not making that up. That actually happened.
It's true.
Did they let you in yet after that?
No.
They stopped having bands. And when DJ Richie Rich went there to do a rave, they mentioned that as it was like a for lack of a better term, a watermark for them. You know, where they
the Youth at Risk clause and contract.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? You can rent the building, but you have to put down a $600 deposit for the water fountain.
They were like, if you're gonna do some sort of musical event, we really need to, you know, have you do this and this and this and this and this.
And have,
you know,
18 police officers there.
So
each at $20 an hour.
Because of Youth
at a minimum of 18 hours.
And actually it wasn't even Youth at Risk, it was Diagnostics. set.
Yeah, it was during their set that people were getting thrown around. And well, Youth at Risk didn't get a good set that night
bouncing
because
off the walls.
We didn't get a good set. Well, they were moshing and shoving each other and throwing each other and punching each other. And Youth at Risk didn't get a good set because the place got flooded. You know, so there was like five people. By the time we got it all sorted out, everybody left.
When I was not with the band, you guys did a show with a relatively famous band that, although I know a few people listening to this podcast might be fans, but...
Seven Dust.
Yeah, Seven Dust.
Never heard of them.
You've never heard of Seven Dust?
They're from Atlanta. They're a great band. They're a great band. Very, sort of a metal versus techno type feel. LaJean is just this amazing singer. Got such a powerful voice, and their drummer sings. I don't know, there's something about the drummers who sing I'm really impressed by, you know?
Like the Carpenters?
Like the Carpenters. They are like the best band still performing today.
They're not stirred ditch. Yeah.
And Papas Fritas?
How about Phil Collins? Huh? There you go.
Genesis.
And now that's a killer band.
Who's the other guy in Genesis?
And a good book of the Bible.
Before Phil Collins?
The other guy before Phil Collins?
Yeah.
There was a guy before Phil Collins?
Yeah, in Genesis.
Oh, Moses?
The guy that did the Sledgehammer song?
Peter Gabriel?
Yeah, Peter Gabriel. Was he a drummer too?
I didn't even know that. How about that piece of trivia right there?
Which one?
Peter Gabriel was in Genesis. I did not know this.
Huh?
You learned something new.
Oh, do you want to, is there, that's
day.
A good segue into the trivia
that's
section.
That's an excellent segue.
We're starting our new regular segment for when we have guests on the show. It's true or false.
So our new bit is true or false. And Mr. Pierce, please explain the rules of the game.
Like, if you get it wrong, you don't get a point. If you get it right, you get a point. So whoever has the most points wins.
That's real groundbreaking. So
we're going to have seven questions.
Very innovative.
Each of you can try to decide whether it's going to be true or false.
Crap in a hat.
And if you tie... You'll have to, you know that scene in Star Trek, where Spock and Kirk have to go. Yeah, that's how you. That's how.
We have to fight to
the death. No idea what you're talking about.
He does. Okay. So, are you ready for question number one?
I am.
Ooh, Mr. Carter. Ooh.
There are hundreds of cities in the world with populations over 1 million persons. True or false? The first city to attain a population of 1 million people was Tokyo.
First city.
First, like globally?
Like ever.
Ever.
Not, just on this planet. Not,
yeah, yeah.
Not including
we're not counting,
Mars.
We're not counting Uranus or
Saturn.
I'd say it's probably true.
Yeah, I'd say it was true too.
False.
No. Tokyo's not first.
The first city in the world to attain a population of 1 million persons was London, England.
Huh. Really?
Really. Question number two. On December 27th, 1932, the largest indoor theater in the world at the time was opened to the public in New York City. And it has hosted such famous people as... Actually, I have a little space there. I was going to put some people, but I forgot. True or
You're
false?
You're a terrible game host.
True or false?
True. No.
This theater is known as Carnegie Hall.
Ooh. I would say that's true.
What was your answer?
I said false.
False? False. It is known as Radio City Music Hall. Yeah. No. Chuck wins.
Son of a...
Did you sing about my mama?
Kidding. Okay.
I feel sorry for your mother.
Question number three. King Edward VII has the distinction of having been heir apparent to the throne longer than anyone in English history, for nearly 60 years as his mother, Queen Victoria, reigned. True or false, there are currently over 500 living direct descendants of Queen Victoria.
Living descendants?
Yes.
I would say that's probably true.
I would say that's false.
It is true. There are 501.
I didn't know it was that close.
Like the Lee's blue jeans.
Yes, just like the that's where they got the name.
That's right.
Yes, back in
what?
1890.
Buddy Lee?
Something. All right. Question number
Thank you.
Four.
Kate Boston.
On April 28th, 1789, Fletcher Christian Christian and 18 of his fellow crewmen mutinied against the captain of the HMS Bounty, the dreaded William Bligh.
No!
While some of the mutineers were eventually caught and brought back to England and tried, others, including Christian, were never caught. True or false, the descendants of the mutineers now make up the tiny population of a small independent nation known as Pitcairn Island.
True.
True.
I got a point! Yay! I got a point!
So you guys really need that one?
Yeah.
Oh, I've heard of Pitcairn.
You didn't watch Mutiny on the Bounty?
Do they talk about that at the end?
Yeah, it's in the Mel Gibson one.
Ah, I want to see that one.
Oh, Mr. Gibson! Oh.
I'm like the Paul Rubens one.
There was another one.
There was one with Marlon Brando, wasn't there?
Paul Rubens, wow.
Yeah, there was a Paul Rubens version of Mutiny on the Bounty.
Okay.
Mutiny on the Booty.
All right, question number, what, five?
Yeah.
The premise of the popular television show Full House centers around a recently widowed father of three young girls named Danny Tanner. He recruits his best friend from college, Joey Gladstone, and his late wife's younger brother, Jesse, to help him take care of his girls. True or false? The name of Danny's wife was Angela.
You know,
Angela?
I never actually really watched Full House.
Moan
me neither.
Yes, you did.
What the hell are you talking about?
You told me something that I did not know.
About Full House?
A factoid. I'm like...
Do you remember the factoid?
What? Yes, I do. I was like, what is all this crap about the Olsen twins? Why are they famous?
And the factoid was that they were on Full House?
Like, dude, they were on Full House.
Well, everybody knows that.
I didn't know it.
I just want to make sure I'm clear here. You think that me telling you that the Olsen twins were on Full House makes me an authority on like watching the TV show?
I did not know it. And you did. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that is pretty good. You Trekkie. Anyway,
faggot.
I don't know why that's funny, but...
I'm going to say false, because it sounds like it's a...
Sounds like who's the boss?
Who's the boss, yeah.
Yeah.
Angela!
What do you say?
Mona! That's all I got.
Wasn't there a third one? What was the little girl's name?
I don't remember.
What do you say? False? Sure.
Yes, I do.
Which one?
The Olsen twins. Final answer, Regis. Can I use my lifeline?
Which is a void, true or false?
I'm going to stick with you. I'm going to go with your...
Sure.
You can't choose the same answer.
What?
I'm just kidding.
You have to be opposite false. Answer.
So what, you say false and you say false?
I'm just going to go with him.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's false. So you both get a point.
What was...
Pam.
Angela! I'm going to be doing that all night now. I got that from you. I learned it from watching you. I'm not okay. Freaking Trekkie.
Question number...
18.
Six. You ready?
Well, I'm
oh, it's a good
myself.
One, I can tell.
Okay, though the band They Might Be Giants has had a very loyal following over the nearly quarter century they have been performing,
yeah.
Only one of their songs has made it on the Billboard Modern Rock Top 10 chart. True or false, this song was Istanbul, not Constantinople.
I'm going to say true.
Istanbul. Man. I'm going to say that's false.
The answer is... Dun, 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 false. The song was Birdhouse in Your Soul.
Make a little birdhouse in your soul.
Never even heard of that song.
I thought that was,
that's a good song.
I thought that they had another big one.
They had some other ones that made it to like the top 20s and stuff.
Yeah.
So.
I thought I remembered something getting up like kind of high on there a long time ago.
No, that was you getting up.
I was kind of high. Okay. It was the fumes.
All right. You ready for the last question? The decider.
I don't know if it's really a decider at this point.
Well, it's pretty close.
You know, for the home team
advantage,
I've lost both games.
So, all right, last question. In 1994, Shirley DeGay of Prince Edward Island went missing and was later found in a shallow grave. Among the most compelling pieces of evidence in the case was a leather jacket covered in DeGay's blood and over two dozen feline hairs. The cat hairs were later shown to have belonged to the cat of Mrs. DeGay's estranged husband, Douglas Beamish, by the use of DNA testing, thus marking the first time non-human DNA has been used in a criminal investigation. True or false? The name of the cat central to the investigation was named Snowball.
Wow.
Man manufactured by Hostess. False.
Man, how would anybody know this?
That's the point. Isn't it?
Jeez.
A forensic scientist would know.
I guess so, because
yeah.
It's a...
Yeah, a forensic scientist is going to run the DNA.
Precedence.
According to the DNA, the cat's name is Snowball.
My sister probably knows. I think my sister knows.
Man, dude, I love...
Yeah, but that's because she was the person who actually killed the...
True.
It's true, it was Snowball.
Yes, I missed it. The cat's name was Snowball.
So we both said false?
We both said false.
And now, if you hear somebody referring to a snowball test, that's what they're talking about.
Oh, I thought that was
testing.
You like pee on a snowball and put it in the freezer.
Speaking of peeing,
hey, and that's a great segue into our guest spot.
So anyway, the final score was 5-2.
Yeah, I got stumped.
Dixon won.
Yay!
So. Right.
Folks, push it up there, move along, shows over folks, let them read, step lively.
the hell was that about?
It's a huge song.
He had a wreck in South Carolina on his bicycle.
I kind of gathered that. Aside from that, what the hell was that about?
He had a lawsuit.
That song, it makes me wonder, why don't the Might Be Giants have more songs on the Billboard chart?
Because they're not pop.
Because they don't suck.
Because they're not sellouts.
Yeah, I wish you guys at home could have seen the bizarre dance moves and choreography that Sir Mildred Pierce was applying to that song. You know, the whole, I used to be an L, now I'm an I. He shot up out of his cherry
eye, now I'm a V, man.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You know,
right.
The back wheels, O was now a letter D.
Yeah.
Doesn't that put a picture in your mind?
That his back tires smashed.
I think of a Mad Magazine.
Red reflector fragments strewn around.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part of the song.
Okay, so now that we heard They Might Be Giants, let's move on to one of my personal favorite segments, which is
movie reviews for movies we've never seen.
This one's going to be a tough one for three of us, I think. The Benchwarmers. Okay, Rob Schneider, right there, that's just about all you need to know. David Spade and John Herder. Heder. A.K.A. Napoleon Dynamite. Right. He's the only one they actually have to, like, tell you who he is. Are trying to make up for lost time in the collective younger days by forming a baseball squad and taking on kids on the adolescent age. Only catch is, these three guys are well into their 30s. And then, I swear to God, I'm not making this up. It says, sad.
Is John Hunter that old?
I
like the first movie, so I'll probably like the second one.
The first movie?
Napoleon Dynamite.
And this is not made by the people who made Napoleon Dynamite.
I know, but his character looks pretty much the same. I mean,
it's an Adam Sandler film.
Other than the fact that he's got straight hair instead of curly.
Yeah. Well, it's an Adam Sandler film. Adam Sandler films could go either way. Because, I mean, yeah, and we're talking about real Adam. We're talking about Punch Drunk Love, Adam. So I'm talking about a movie where he wrote the script and, you know, stuff like that.
I like Punch Drunk Love, though. should avoid the whole writing thing.
Well, he's done a few movies that I thought were actually halfway decent.
So he directed this?
I don't know if he directed it or not, but he did write it or something. It's his creative work. Right off the bat, if I had to give any thumbs down, I would sum them all up in two words, and those two words are Rob Schneider.
Mm. He's done something good.
He was.
You know, I think it might have ended up cut.
Usually when he's good in movies, it's because he's got a really small part.
Yeah.
Whereas if the movie centrals around him as a main character...
You never agree with that?
Five.
When the movie is central around him as a main character, the movie just blows so bad.
Well, at least he's only kind of a supporting semi-main character.
Blows is not a good term. Because there's nothing pleasurable about it. And if it were blowing, it might be good. I don't know.
It blows. Thumbs up.
This movie blows.
It's like fellatio. Better than fellatio.
It's cinematic fellatio. We call that porn these days.
Right, let's cut that shit. Then. 6 stars. I'm going to say 6. I bet there's some laughs. I bet there's some good laughs.
I'm going to say 4.
Fun 4.
Because I think it's going to have some decent moments. I think it
would you say? 4?
It's going to be 4's
not a good movie.
Just barely watchable.
He doesn't get IMDb stars totally. He totally doesn't get them.
Yeah, because...
They're always like 2 or 3 or 10.
Yeah, that's true.
It depends on the movie we're talking about. We've picked some pretty extremes.
I know.
I think that 4 is pretty close to 5, man.
It's which is pretty close to 6, which is pretty close to 7. So 4 is pretty much the same as 7.
You know... as for Benchwarmers, I really think that Napoleon Dynamite was wasted. And
in Napoleon Dynamite, you mean? In the movie Napoleon Dynamite?
In Benchwarmers.
John Heder.
Have you seen it?
I think that he, you know, is...
Are you just reviewing it like
really
as if you had?
A really talented actor. In the immortal words of Ross Perot. Can I finish? I think he's, you know, such a high caliber... And that his serious
acting
career...
Well, what else have
career,
you seen him in? Have you seen him in Napoleon Dynamite? What if that's the only character he can do?
You know, interestingly enough, he was
Reese
in Scary Movie 4,
uh-huh.
And he played Napoleon Dynamite.
Seriously?
Not kidding.
I want to see that.
No, you don't.
It's called Just Like Heaven, and it features Reese Witherspoon.
Okay, I do remember that. And he was in that, wasn't he? Did you see that?
And he was just so extremely talented.
You haven't even seen that, have you? You're going off on tangents with about other movies you haven't even seen.
Well, what's the point, man? We're reviewing movies we haven't seen.
I know, but we're not supposed to pretend like we have. So okay. How many stars are you going to give it?
I give it negative 57.
Well, okay, there we go. So I give it 4, SMP gives it 6, and Void gives it negative 57.
All right. Onward.
I don't think IMDb lets you do that. But anyway.
Invalid selection.
Okay. Have either of you seen RV?
I'm half one of those.
I haven't, but I want to see it.
Ever since Harold Ramis directed Chevy Chase in 1983's Vacation, people have been trying to capably capture on film the beauty is in the catastrophe feeling of taking your family on a cross-country trip. So here's another attempt. Robin Williams is the bumbling head of the household, imagine that, trying to reconnect with his distant wife and 2 children by renting a motor coach and taking it for a few thousand miles. Yeah, good plan.
Robin Williams is hilarious.
Robin Williams has done some amazingly good movies with Oscar-winning performances, and not necessarily Oscar-winning performances, but downright good performances, and then he's done some absolute shit.
What? Mrs. Doubtfire?
That was kind of somewhere in between. It had its moments.
The most recent thing I've seen Robin Williams in was a...
Mork for Mork episode.
Mork and Mindy.
You knew what I meant.
Yeah.
The most
recent, shooting for editorial accuracy more than, you know, entertainment value.
The most recent thing I've seen Robin Williams in was a video from E3. Do you know what E3 is?
A video game?
The video game conference every year.
Yeah.
And they were previewing that game Spore that I was telling you about with Will Wright.
Spore.
And it had like 30 minutes of Will Wright up on stage playing around with it, and then he had Robin Williams come up on stage and play around with it to show that, you know, like how easy it is for somebody that's never done it before.
Even Robin Williams can do it.
He was like genuinely funny, just making shit up on the spot, you know?
Yeah,
he's a funny guy.
And it's funny because he's, you know, usually if he tries to play video games, he's inhibited by the massive quantities of body hair.
Gets caught in the mouse and stuff.
Yeah. That's like...
Well, that's why they...
He makes Void seem shorn by comparison.
They made optical mouses just for him.
There's nothing quite like having a shorn scrotum.
So, yeah, I'm going to give RV 7.
I am going to probably give it a 4 again.
Mm.
I think it's going to have its moments, but...
I really like the lady.
Oh, that she's in...
Robin Williams is not a lady.
in Curb Your Enthusiasm, she's brilliant.
Yeah, she is funny.
She's brilliant.
Well, she's not in Curb Your Enthusiasm, is she now? She's in a movie called RV.
Well, she's playing the same character.
Because she's good in one, I'd imagine she'd be...
I've seen the trailer and she's
tolerable in
the
other.
The thing is, Curb Your Enthusiasm is entirely improvised, whereas this is scripted.
It's not. It's about 80%.
It's mostly... Well,
I mean, it's 80% scripted, rather.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So this character from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
So, what do you give an RV? How many stars are you giving an RV?
57.
Well, I'm giving it 4.
You're fired.
So, I give it 4. S&P gives it.
I think I said 7.
Whoa. And Void gives it 57 stars. So,
7.
Moving on to the gem of this one.
It's my favorite sauce.
I'm not even going to tell you guys what the movie title is. Think your little kid is a hellion?
Omen.
How about Robert Thorne, who has a very real suspicion that his son might be the Antichrist incarnate, which is not possible because George W. Bush has been president for a long time.
No.
And no, Ritalin won't help this kid. The sarcastic laughs were added in by me.
You know I'm not big on those kind of movies in the first place.
The first one was so good.
I'm going to give it 6. 6. 6. Nah, I'm going to give it 4.
4. Okay.
Because didn't they have like a big like contest to find the creepiest kid as possible? And I saw the kid. He didn't
probably
look like...
Kid didn't look creepy, no.
Nah. Maybe you just have to see him in the movie. Because maybe his creepiness is very subtle.
They should have used like, you know, one of the Olsen twins.
I saw a trailer for it.
Oh, you want to hear another Full House fact? I found this one while I was researching Full House.
Let's stop right there. You were researching Full House?
Yeah, to get my trivia question.
You know, I don't think I'd have ever spoken those words aloud anywhere that anyone could have heard them. I just want to repeat this. You were researching Full House. You had to base your master's thesis on, you know.
Yes. Okay, one of the Olsen twins is right-handed, and the other one is left-handed. So the character on Full House, Michelle,
was ambidextrous
because of that. So they could, you know.
So they could write it in.
When did that ever come up? Like, hey, have you noticed our daughter is ambidextrous?
Ew.
Yes, look in this one shot.
What the hell? What's going through your mind?
I don't even remember what movie we're doing. The Omen.
So back to the Omen.
I was giving it 3 stars, I think.
You changed.
You said four.
I'll say four.
Honestly, I'm probably inclined to give it like 3 or 4.
Well, you've probably seen the original, right?
Yes.
Did you like it?
I did.
I'm kind of jaded. By the time I'd seen the original, I'd seen like Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday 13th, 1-9, yeah.
Is it even in that kind of genre?
No.
Film? It's more of a cerebral.
It's more along the Exorcist type.
Yeah, that's how it's.
Maybe they came out at the same time. I don't know which came out first, but
I mean, The Exorcist
is definitely better.
Unused.
Okay. Well, you know that's a good time to lead
did
into.
Did you give a stars for Omen?
No. Yes, he did. No, but I'm sure.
10 stars. Let's go. Move on.
Wow.
You're not doing that. You're not allowed to do this anymore.
What? I loved it. The original, man.
10 stars.
What?
Come on.
The survey says.
There's only one movie I've ever given 10 stars to, and it deserved it. No, Serenity.
Oh, I was close.
Well, anyway. So.
Anyway.
Moving along, that's a good time to lead into a segment that we have here specifically for this episode.
But I love
which
movies.
Is my list of the 10 greatest zombie films ever made and your feedback on what? You say you didn't like.
Oh, have you already come up with a list?
Yeah, got the list right here. Now, one thing I'd like to point out, I may get some rejection by this. I may even get some rejection from people in this very room. 28 Days Later is not a zombie film.
Oh, it's a zombie
film. Has never been a zombie film. It is actually a remake of another George Romero film called The Crazies, which you and I have seen. Well, you know, technically you want to have zombies in your zombie film, but, you know, if you want to overlook that minor, you know, like, fact, then, yeah, you can call that zombie-less film a zombie film. It's a technicality. There's no zombies in the zombie film. Why not make a pirate movie with no pirates in it?
What are they, then, if they're not dead monsters?
You don't remember The Crazies?
No, I don't.
We've seen it. I saw it with you. It's a movie he made after he made Dawn of the Dead, and it's basically about, starting with the sounds familiar, an infection of a biological weapon that caused everyone to go crazy, hence the title of the film, and start attacking each other. But anyway, here's my list.
Okay. Are we starting at the...
Some of these you may know.
The crap seen. End of
Yeah, we're starting at 10 with one right. being the top. The number 10, some of these... there's a few of these I know you haven't seen. Number 10 is the Dawn of the Dead remake.
I like that one. I think it should be higher.
Well, wait until you hear the other movie.
I don't know, I'm just saying. But I know that the original Dawn of the Dead is going to be a lot higher than that one. I think the remake was better.
Is that one with Ving Rhames?
Yeah.
You think the remake was better than the original?
Mm-hmm. I enjoy it more.
Wow.
I think the original is way too kitschy.
I do too.
I think you're way off.
I enjoy the remake.
You're too sentimental about it.
I enjoy the remake better than the original.
I've watched both of them extensively. In fact, I watched them both back to back. And it struck me at the time, Dawn was a better made film. It is. It's a better made film for a number of reasons. Now, the special effects are a little bit better.
Yeah, I think that makes it, that's a big deal.
But, well, see, at the time, you know, those are top-notch special effects at the time.
I know, but everything can be improved on.
There's always
going to be improved. Yeah, there's going to be a movie that's going to come out that's going to have better special effects, but also suck. The remake had absolutely none of the substance of the first film, of the original.
Hmm.
None. Not a single shred. They didn't even try to tackle social issues, which is something that Romero has always done with his films. So moving on to number 9, here's one you probably haven't seen. The remake of Night of the Living Dead. Tom Savini directing.
Yeah.
They changed the story on that one, and it really didn't bother me.
I picked up on social commentary even in that one.
Yeah.
I thought, you know.
It was, well, for one thing, the female character was much more headstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And she had it together, you know?
She was a fighter.
Yeah, I think if you like The Dawn of the Dead,
No,
I wasn't listening, but I already know what's going to happen.
They change large sectors of the story, and there are certain things that are better done. Okay, moving on to 8. 8 is Resident Evil.
I was really high the first time I saw that.
It was really good, huh?
But the opening scene with the little window thing, you know, and it's got that Marilyn Manson song playing over it.
Yeah, that's a very well directed.
And it just slowly goes in. And I was so high when I saw that. It's probably one of my favorite cinematic moments ever.
He's a pretty good director too. He also went on to do Event Horizon and a lot of other movies that are just like they may not necessarily be very.
Event Horizon was before Resident Evil.
But whatever. He also the point is he did both.
Okay.
Greatly directed. One of the things I liked about that was that he did try to inject a lot of the social commentary. Yeah. You know, it's got some overacted parts.
Don't
some,
see the
some
sequel.
Kind of predictable, cheesy parts. I haven't seen the sequels. Number 7 is Land of the Dead.
Yeah, I'm glad you put that on there. I didn't think you really liked that movie.
Glad it made
it. It grew on me. Yes.
I think.
I'm still bothered extremely by John Leguizamo.
Seriously?
Yeah. The more movies I see him in, the more I hate him. And it's it's because every movie he plays in, he's John Leguizamo.
No, he's got a lot of variety.
It's just because
he does not have much range.
Hey,
have you seen him
in Spawn?
Watch it.
He played John Leguizamo in Spawn.
Watch his,
8 maggots on a pizza. Real maggots. He ate them for the role. That's a dedicated actor.
Watch
his
stand up, and you'll see.
I think his stand up's brilliant. Even though his stand up's brilliant, he doesn't do that in his movie role.
No, he's typecast. That's a difference than not having a lot of range.
Yeah, but you can pick. He's pretty successful. I'm sure like Jim Carrey and Robin Williams are typecast, both comedians who didn't have a lot of range, who stepped out and took some chances and actually succeeded at it.
Well, there's a difference between taking chances and having things offered for you to...
Even Keanu Reeves.
I am an FBI agent!
Even he says...
I knew he was going to say that.
Even he that says line. He can't control, for the most part, who hires him. That's a quote.
Yeah, but you Keanu say, Reeves is dumb as a like box him? Of hammers. He probably can control. He's just oblivious. You know? He probably has no contract signed with everyone, but they keep saying, no, you're not going to contract sign with us. He's like, no.
If you,
You know, you signed up for 5 more movies with us last week. Did I? Yeah, you're doing it for $5 a pop. Oh, damn. What was I thinking?
I must have been really wasted.
Anyway.
Did you see Thumbsucker with him?
What? No.
Thumbsucker? Oh, I respect him a lot more now.
I'm really curious.
He plays Keanu Reeves, but there's kind of a tongue-in-cheek level to it.
Constantine.
You can kind of tell that he's...
Constantine is one of my favorite movies.
I haven't seen that. Have you seen it?
I am, no.
Why,
I am
why
really...
Why did you say,
Keanu.
Because
it's Keanu.
Because
it's Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, I know.
I look, if hating Keanu is wrong, I don't want to be right. Anyway, so yeah, and I'm really curious about Scanner Darkly too. I don't know how that's going to turn out. Because thing, we're not even getting the full range of his facial expressions. It's just a voice bit. So
well, it's rotoscope.
I know it's rotoscope, but the nice thing is they can actually animate him. So.
And let's get back to the list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, number 6...
Matrix is one of my favorite zombie movies, though. So.
Number 6 is Dead Alive, a.k.a. Brain Dead.
I haven't seen that in a while. That's the one with the ear, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's how I always ask. That's the one with the ear and the pudding, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Which...
Actually, this is a good point to bring up something that's always bothered me about movie titles. Almost anything with just 2 words in it seems very generic to me, and it's very hard to remember. Like Brain Dead?
Is Dead Alive, in America, Brain Dead, and...
Evil Dead is another one. They should have gone with the other one, which was Book of the Dead. I think that would have been a much better title for that movie, but they chose not to do that.
That was
I can't
not,
remember why.
That was out of Sam Raimi's hands.
Oh, I know.
That was a studio executive.
I think they wanted to name it Book of the Dead, but
and
they
the thing
were ruled
is,
on that.
Into the Woods was the
Yeah, but you
title.
Have to you have to admit...
What was it?
Into the Woods.
You have to admit, bad taste, good movie title.
It Love that just that just on. That just barely goes over the line on the 2 word rule, barely.
Yeah.
if it had been called This Is in Bad Taste. That would have been much more memorable.
This film is in bad taste.
They could have called them, oh, how about Exploding Sheep if they called it that?
Exploding Sheep. It's got a lot of syllables, so it kind of breaks out of the...
And you still would have known what it was about.
Rat monkey.
Right.
That funky monkey.
So at number five, we have Day of the Dead.
Yeah. Which
is, I think, very unappreciated from the trilogy.
That's my favorite of the trilogy, though.
Really?
Of the quadrilogy.
Well, it was a trilogy at the time. It's a
four-movie trilogy.
And, you know, I think that's also probably, even now, the most socially relevant one, too.
Although, what weirds me out about the whole movie is that the main character, the highest-ranking military guy in the film,
yeah,
looks just like Bono from the same... from like the mid 80s. But he doesn't sound anything like him, but he looks
like
him.
Wouldn't it be awesome if it was Mono? Number four, interestingly enough, for me, is the original Line of the Living Dead.
It still stands up. So good movie.
Yes, it's still exceptionally well done and extremely poignant at its time. I think it was so groundbreaking, you know, when it came out.
Just from a general kind of filmmaking standpoint, I think it was really ahead of its time.
Yes.
And I think that came out in, what, 68?
Yeah, something like that.
The whole kind of realism movement that was really more popular in the 70s, that was really at the forefront. Films like that Easy Rider.
Yeah.
I can't really think of another film that came out in that same year.
It's also like the first horror film I know of to have realistic, like, gore and do it in a very... like effective way that wasn't exploitive but shocking.
Unsettling.
At the same time, yeah, like it actually had its place in the film, like it actually had a presence that served a purpose. I mean, it's relatively tame now, the point that they show it on TV completely unedited, but at the time that movie was like very shocking.
There was nothing like that.
Yeah, no one was like, you didn't see entrails and that yeah, well really you didn't. You didn't see, you know, like the severed hand, and you didn't see like the body laying on the ground with like its eye ripped open and the face torn off. I mean, that type of stuff people didn't really touch. When there was violence in films, they couldn't really handle the special effects, which didn't have any special effects really to speak of. It had a few makeup effects, that was about it. But it was just, it really handled it in a different way with that too. And I think it ushered in the modern horror film. I think it was the first modern horror film up until that point. I don't think there were any modern horror films, even the ones that
Nosferatu
preceded it. So there's that. Okay, number three, Cemetery Man. A.K.A. Morte de la Morte.
Not number one.
A lot of people don't appreciate it because the ending especially is so incomprehensible.
I don't want to ever watch that again until I've got a nice DVD widescreen version.
Well, you're not going to get to do that in America.
That's not true.
I'm going to move to Italy.
They finally... that's news to me.
It's coming
because
out.
There's a DVD version in Region 2. Okay, well, moving on. Number two is
Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead, yeah.
Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun.
I appreciate it, if only for the fact that the name, you know... The most recent viewing of it, there are actually some things I started to notice I didn't like about it.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
They talk funny.
No, I caught some things I never caught before, but it just seemed like... It's kind of hard to put my finger on, but it seemed like it was missing a lot of it.
I think probably the fact that it's not as serious, I think it probably...
No, that's not it. I mean, I appreciate the humor. It's a very funny movie. It just seemed like, I think the more I watch it, I'm going to start to feel like it's not going to age well. I don't know. I feel like it's not going to be as timeless as some of the other ones.
Sure.
I don't know. That's just... But I liked it enough to make it number two.
Yeah.
Number one zombie
that
movie. Kazam. Featuring Shaquille O'Neal. All know is a flesh eating zombie.
So,
I think it's on my top 10 of all time. I think it's a brilliant film.
I thought it was very well done, but not better than Cemetery.
Well, moving on to number one is, of course, House of the Dead. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry, that was a lie.
That's the one with the...
With the video game footage.
Speaking of the Matrix, wow. They took that Matrix effect and just, like, drove it straight into people's heads.
What? What effect?
You know, where they freeze the camera and then they go, like, 360 around the person. Yeah.
Like that Coolio video.
That was a horrible, horrible movie. That's probably...
Yeah.
You know, that I think that was actually worse than some of the cheesy, bad zombie films I've ever seen. Have you even seen, like, Like, no, it's unrippable. I sat there with Negate. Watched it going like, man, I can't believe how bad this is. And he was horrified too, but none of us had seen it.
Well, it's a horror movie. You're supposed to be horrified.
Not that kind of horrified. We were horrified at how bad the movie was. On number one, which I knew this was going to elicit some arguments here, at least from one person, but Dawn of the Dead, the original, which I think is probably...
Not bad.
Dawn is probably the most interesting and the most intricate. And certainly, I mean, it's the longest of the series. It's the one I most enjoy to watch of all of them.
Falling from your grave.
yeah, that was the 6 hour remixed by yours truly. The song is Nevermore. And
Neverless. The way the song came together was pretty odd. Because you know, they were giving me music and they're like, hey, you know, we need you to get creative, we need to squeeze out some of the creative juices of flow and write some lyrics to this. So I sat down and I wrote the lyrics. Right? Just like jamming out and listening to the music the way the song went. And I wrote like half of the song. And then I sang what I did over top of it. And I was like, there's all these big empty spots. So that's how. So then I wrote another half thinking, this will be for the other vocalist.
Was Lindsay in the band at the time?
She was in the band, but she wasn't writing on that. She didn't. I mean, she performed it, but I had to. You know, I didn't have to. I decided to write the lyrics for that song for her to do.
Mm.
And I mean, she came up with the way to do harmonies and the way to, you know, the way of singing. But the actual words, the actual things I came up with.
This day in history.
And what's today?
June 14th.
Yeah.
A day that will live in infamy.
Okay. In this day in history, in 1900, Hawaii became a U.S. territory.
Did we conquer the Hawaiians?
Yes, yes. There used to be a king of Hawaii.
We traded beads and
the pagan Hawaiians.
The heathens. Heathen Hawaiians.
The Keanus.
Oh, God. Let's establish a new rule that we do not bring Keanu Reeves up in any other future podcast.
I like it when he talks about Keanu Reeves. Tasty film.
No way, Bill. Yes way, Ted.
Dude, Idaho cannot move below 50 miles an hour or it'll blow off.
Alright.
He's making a new movie with her.
With Sandra Bullock?
Yes.
All right. Is it another speed movie?
It's coming out now.
Ah.
It's a romance.
Keanu Reeves is on speed.
In 1938, Action Comics issues the first Superman comic.
Oh, right on my alley. That's, you're the big comic book.
Do you like Superman? I don't. I've never been into comics.
Oh, I like comics.
You like the violent porn comics of the Japan.
He thinks all manga's got like tentacle rape in it.
No. I know all manga doesn't have tentacle rape. Okay. Just the mangas I like have tentacle rape. Because the rest of them are annoying and whiny.
Is it manga or manga?
That's the anime. You can't hear the whininess of a manga.
I know. But it does still have big-eyed, cute children.
Well, there's like different
annoying, pointless things.
There's different ways to draw a manga. Like Initial D, the eyes are surprisingly small.
Yeah. I would never have known that. It's a good thing you got that laptop. For real.
Well, I mean, you had like a 1 in 365 chance that it did happen on this day.
No. I would have never known that. That's what we were just talking about.
Oh. Sometimes it could be 366.
Yeah.
I got ADD, I think. ADHD.
But the chances of it have happening on a leap day are considerably lower because there's less of them.
I heard that the first issue,
so,
that Superman, was worth beyond $3,000.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
3,001.
Like the number of
offspring.
Like
when I heard about it, that somebody had it, and this was like 8 years ago,
yeah.
It was worth $3,000.
Yeah,
that's,
I shouldn't have burned my copy. All right, so in 1940, World War II, Paris falls under German occupation.
Really?
Yeah.
What about Nicole Richie?
Huh?
No, Paris, she deserved it. She got what was
coming. I'm just going to let that lie.
Or edit it out.
No, I'm leaving that in.
They're not friends anymore.
Really? Because of World War II?
Did you want to hear Paris Hilton's new song?
Oh, Paris Hilton's hit single.
Is it a hit now?
It was a hit before that came out. That was one of those, like,
just kind of penciled
it
in. The video is out, and it did debut.
Her video is out? Yeah, we know that.
Number one hot videos on MTV.com. It says a couple of previews from the album were leaked onto the internet in May of 2006.
I wonder if she seems slutty.
I'm going to edit that to say most notably on the Shapeless Mass podcast.
Are you serious about that?
Of course. I think there was one other day in history thing or whatever.
One other factoid on the days.
Yeah.
On this day in history.
June 14th?
June 14th.
Okay, you'll remember this because this was not recent, but it was within our lifetime. In 1993, a week-long product tampering scare, later proven to be a hoax, occurs as customers throughout the United States discover syringes and unopened cans of Diet Pepsi Cola. Remember that?
Yeah, it was fake. Yeah.
I remember there being like a scare with that. I remember hearing about it, but I don't remember if people
heard about it.
I was thought it was kind of a legend.
I'm kind of disappointed that there's not an actual link to an article about that on this Wikipedia. So,
as opposed to the other Wikipedia.
Yeah.
The thing is, I thought it sounded so much like the Saturday Night Live skit of the rat in the Coke. I'm like, come on. This cannot be real.
I remember that one.
It was a Saturday Night Live skit. So, how can we get rich? Okay, we'll find a rat in a Coke, and we'll sue them, and that's how we'll get rich.
They probably got the idea from that. I mean, was it from the same kind of period?
Maybe.
The 90s?
Maybe.
Back when it didn't suck? Or maybe it did, depending on who you ask?
No, see. Or the theory that Saturday Night Live has always sucked.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's never actually had a good episode, but somehow it's fostered the idea in people's minds that the older episodes are better.
Well, I think
because Comedy Central has shown the old episodes.
Oh yeah,
they
suck. And they're even edited down to show you the best parts.
Yeah, and they still suck.
I think the best episode was the one that you saw when you were 12. I don't know if you've heard of this one, but in 1991, Marshall Ledbetter. He did go on to kill himself, and it's probably because of people like you.
I certainly hope so.
So, he was he's described in Wikipedia as being an American psychedelics enthusiast
and a bedwetter,
subgenius and unconventional.
He was a subgenius?
Yeah, he's a subgenius and an unconventional protester. In the early morning of June 14th, Ledbetter, then a student of Florida State University, broke into the Florida State Capitol building and phoned a number of odd demands from the office of Wayne Todd, the sergeant-at-arms of the Florida Senate. This triggered a police standoff. The police were not sure if he was armed or might have a hostage, but it eventually ended peacefully, and this action has become legendary in circles, and I'll read a little description of what he did. One night in 1991, Ledbetter broke a window and walked unopposed into the incredibly phallic-shaped state capitol building in Tallahassee, Florida.
I love that little detail there.
Once phallic. Inside the...
Please tell me phallic is a link.
I'll make it a link. Once inside, the 22-year-old Ledbetter blockaded himself into an administrative office wing and called the police, demanding that society wake up and stop being automaton clones of one another and making all sorts of crazy demands of the state police. He told them that he wanted, among other things, one large Gumby's pizza and 666 donuts, either with or without jelly. There are conflicting reports, oddly enough. The police surrounded the Capitol building and set up a SWAT team and snipers throughout the area, while Marshall Ledbetter demanded that the police get the following people on the telephone so you could talk to them. And this included Jello Biafra, Ice Cube, and some guy named Lemmy Kilmeister.
He's the lead singer of Motorhead.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
The standoff lasted...
An odd choice of people. And interestingly enough, people who probably collaborated at one point.
Jello Biafra did go on to record something about Marshall Ledbetter, too.
So did Pearl Jam.
I wonder if Ice-T did.
Yellow Ledbetter.
I mean, Ice Cube.
Ah.
I'm just kidding. I have no idea what that song is.
The standoff lasted several hours before finally the police broke in and found him sitting under a desk with a telephone, completely unarmed. He was arrested on breaking and entering charges, but only after one of the most excellent police standoffs of all time.
Huh.
So.
For a second, I thought for sure you were going to say he was the John 3:16 rainbow.
Oh, that guy?
Afro wig guy.
He's in prison now, isn't he?
I don't know. They're doing a story of his life. Finally, like a cinematic, like a film story of his life, which I think is far overdue. Because he has a very storied life. Siddiq Liagar Rag.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, I'm not interested.
I got it.
Uyat At Fusti
like Twin Peaks, the little Twin Peaks midget man.
Yeah, where there's all the that was the most bizarre film. Firewalk with me.
I have no idea what you're saying. I give up. I get 0 points. Onward.
Oh, look at the turntable. Skinhead.
I can't think like that.
Did Ghost start that?
No, I don't think it was Ghost that started that.
Ghost?
I'm not sure.
From the Matrix? Let's talk about the Matrix some more.
Who started that?
It's a good question that I can only answer with.
I'm pretty sure our little core of friends started that.
You know,
I just know that it's usually played in the car.
Yeah.
And it's usually at least two. You have to have two people. You can't do it by yourself. It's boring.
Right.
It's fun. The key elements are this. Okay. You do not tell the other person you're playing the game. You just start doing it.
Yeah. And they have to figure out what you're seeing.
No one's ever really like sat down. This is the first time I think I've ever actually sat down and actually talked about it.
Yeah.
Because this is something we've done for a good 20 years.
Yeah.
And our friend, you'd be driving down the road and you'd start seeing the signs right by and you go.
Reg rub pots.
You just sit with the person and go, pots. And then drive off past the stop sign. They're like, what? And then you pass, like, you know, UPS. You're like, spook.
So the game's more like not actually doing it, but it's like the challenge of figuring out what's going on.
You gotta catch what they read before it gets too far away. Yeah.
I mean, it's not like points or anything like that, but it's just kind of. And it's interesting thing to do when you're in the car with somebody.
Yeah.
Sort of like I Spy or something.
Yeah. It's really silly, and there's not much point to it, but if you want to play it, it's always fun to get people who are unsuspecting, who've never played the game. Yeah. I've done this with people in the car.
You never did it with me. You should have done it with me.
It has to pop into your head.
Yeah.
Usually you and I talk a lot, whereas I've been in the car with, for instance, Todd. I've done it with Todd. I don't think he understood what's going on either.
Does he yet? He will now.
I'll have to do it again. I'll just have to remember. And like I said, and it's best you. It's never been like said, hey, let's play the backwards game. It's always like the person just will look over at you, or won't even necessarily look at you, but they'll say in a way that, you know, obviously they're talking to you. They'll just start saying these things backwards. Now I've been with some of these guys like him and Ghost enough where when they started or I started with them, everyone immediately knows what's going on as far as the three of us go. And there are a couple other friends like I know Jackal. He knows it too.
Yeah. He doesn't do it very
well. That's because he can't read.
No, you spring it on him and he usually won't catch it by the time.
Well, so, hey, while we're talking about our friends, this would be a good time to play the guest spot.
The guest spot.
Me and Jeremy grew up believing the movie Red Dawn was going to happen.
As did I.
This is very, very important. We thought the Russians were coming and no one seemed to give a shit. But me and Jeremy. So we are 12, I'm 12, he's 11, and we've got like military hand-to-hand manuals, survival books, just all kinds of shit you do not give to paranoid little boys. Me and Jeremy have built caches of like weaponry and shit like this out in the woods because we just knew, you know, we'll be ready when the sons of bitches of commies come in. Jeremy's a big fan of the bullwhip, the 6-foot leather bullwhip.
Like Indiana Jones.
Like Indiana Jones, yeah. Well, Indiana Jones is actually like a 9 or a 12. It's long as shit.
Yeah.
It's a lot more than self, though.
They do not wrap around things, and you are not able to swing off.
Well, yeah, that was the problem, because Jeremy had been trying for years to, like, hit something and then, like, go. But the problem is he'd get it up there, and as soon as he jumped off, it would, like, unwrap, and he would fall. Not get hurt, but, like, he couldn't swing, you know, fucking tree.
How did Indiana Jones do it, though?
Movie magic.
So, anyway, I get this fucking idea. I'll take this probably 6-inch section of rosebush stem, and I will braid it, and I will braid it into the end of Jeremy's bullwhip.
Oh boy!
So that he can hit it. You know, we broke it up and bent it, so it's in there, and it's fucking. I mean, the thorns are like, dude, half to 3/4 inch long. They're fucking long, and. He goes, cool, man, cool, and puts it in his sack, and we're running around doing something, and something happens, and me and him get pissed off at each other. This is the same day. I don't know what it was over. I, to this day, don't know. I know Jeremy got mad at me and I pushed him. And he pushed me and I, like, slapped him or something. I didn't punch him. I think I slapped him in the face. I mean, he got, like, furious. Reached back, ripped open that sack, raced inside, snatched that bullwhip out. All right? And I'm, like, a good 7 feet from him. And he goes, whoosh. And the second it cracked, this red fucking line from the top of his forehead to the side of his chin appears instantly. He goes, pow! And there's a blood red line on Jeremy's face. And he goes, and the first thing that went through my head was, why the fuck did you do that? But apparently, that little tiny bit of rosebush was enough to throw the weight and everything off. When Jeremy cracked it, the shit came back and hit him. He, like, runs home, and I'm like,
do you have a scar?
No, dude, it was a fucking bullwhip smash. So I go to his house later, he's sitting there, he's eating, and I'm like, he's like, hey, man, he's got this welt. I mean, it goes from, like,
so
right,
well,
here,
you didn't pierce the skin.
What about his left eye? Down like this, and down like this. And it was a puffy line, and on it was a couple of scrapes and scratches with the thorns ahead of it. But the worst problem was the, you know, that cracking sound a bullet makes is because it's breaking the sound barrier. It just broke the sound barrier on Jeremy's fucking face, and it happened to have a piece of rosebush in it.
Oh, God.
So he was like, oh, you know, it was like no big deal. We never spoke of it again. Or I didn't think about it for years. Until like a couple of weeks ago, and I was like at practice, and I just fell over, and I was like, why? I was like, okay, you don't have to stop. I have to tell you this, because I'm about to piss my fan.
Granted, I have more stories than most people, but doesn't everybody have a story where they fuck themselves up?
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. I can tell you several about me. Like, you know I drink a lot.
Okay.
I've been having this problem with peeing in weird places. And not remembering it.
Like on other people's stuff?
No, the best is still when I pull the drawer out of my desk, dump the stuff out, put it back in, and then piss in the drawer.
I like how you had the fortitude. You had the fortitude to take everything out.
Dude, I have a recollection that I remember looking through my desk for something. The peeing part was just totally whatever.
I remember when you about beat Greg's ass.
So I'm curious, when you woke up the next, I mean, was it still, like, did it leak out? Or?
No, apparently Kelly said something to me, and I pulled the drawer out and went to the bathroom.
Yeah, but I mean, was it, like,
I pissed on my guitar. That makes no sense. I remember going to the bathroom. Which Kelly said she saw me. I got up, went to the bathroom, came out, pulled my set, a pistol, my guitar.
Maybe it's like some sort of like in a past life
it's
you were a dog.
It's called
Tammy. That's by a dog's philosophy. You can't either fucking piss on it.
No, the big problem is, you know how I see.
If your entire life is printed on a T-shirt, I just want you to know that.
No, several T-shirts. Be fair, Dick.
You know, he told that story again, without a bullwhip. But he told about the random urine territorial pissings.
Mm-hmm.
He told about that again to me the other night, and it was a whole heck of a lot better than that.
Yeah,
because he talked about they
you
were
should
in
have recorded it.
They were in a hotel. Yeah, if I'd only known. They were in a hotel in Columbus. Okay, and he gets up from sleeping or whatever after playing a chair leg concert, and he goes and he finds a corner where there's a stack of someone's clothes.
Oh, God.
Like Debbie.
And he drops trowel and starts peeing on him. And somebody says, hey, are you peeing? So he stops. The instant they do that, it's like, it stops. And he goes to the bathroom. But it was too late. He had already urinated all over.
So, yeah, now you know our email addresses, and also you can check out the podcast itself at podcast.shapelessmass.com. Again, that website, podcast.shapelessmass.com. So, you want to go ahead and talk about politics real quick?
Arbitrate.
You have something I want to talk about?
Sure.
The Guantanamo suicides. I'm quoting an article here. Three inmates apparently committed suicide early Saturday in the U.S. military prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. They've been described as two Saudis and one Yemeni. I don't know. Yemeni? What's up, yo? I'm a Yemeni. This is the line that really sticks out. Harris said the suicides were premeditated. Quote, not an act of desperation, but rather an act of asymmetric warfare waged against us. Unquote. So basically, they are waging this horrifying warfare against us by committing suicide.
I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, what can you say about it? So, I was hoping this was going to be a more broad conversation about the whole concept of Guantanamo Bay.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that sentence is ridiculous on it's just ridiculous. I mean, it doesn't really deserve comment. I mean, it's an absurd thing to say.
I think it does, but I'll tell you why. I think this is the broader element. It has nothing to do with Guantanamo. It has more to do with the propaganda that surrounded this war in general. And that is the idea that I know I'm dwelling on the absurdity of it, but that seems to be the stock of this administration is whenever something like this happens, it's almost like it reminds me of Baghdad Bob. It reminds me of that guy.
No, the Americans are not there are no Americans in Iraq. They have not succeeded, and they're like American soldiers running behind him, you know?
This is the other article that goes along with this. I'm cribbing this heavily from avoidiscomputer.com, which is an excellent web blog that I also contribute to, very political. But the other thing that he mentioned that's worth bringing up here is Bill O'Reilly actually blames human rights groups for the and this is straight off of the conservativevoice.com, the conservativevoice.com being the address, and which I doubt they're like, since they're conservative, I doubt they're misquoting Mr. O'Reilly. But
that's kind of sound like something taken out of context there. I mean, because that's absolutely ridiculous. Like, what is the ACLU's fault?
I think within the last few days, Bill O'Reilly actually visited Guantanamo Bay.
But not for the reasons we would hope.
Yeah, he...
bad a guy, come on.
And he pretty much said, like, you know, they... You know, he pointed out how great it is that they've gained weight because they're being fed so well and stuff like
that. It's not like they can go out and get any exercise in a 6x5 cell.
So, I mean, he definitely hit the good points of living at Guantanamo Bay.
Well, he should move there.
Yeah.
For me, these stories are just an example of the propaganda machine, which I think every day becomes more and more absurd. Though I think the difference between, a lot of people like to liken it, and I'm one of those people, tend to liken it to the 1984 George Orwell universe, but I think the difference is that George Orwell actually, I think, treated it with a little more respect and reverence, not in a respectful sense like he thought it was a good thing, but, I mean, in 1984, stuff wasn't this silly. And this stuff is kind of almost like you didn't read this stuff from 1984 and laugh, whereas you hear this stuff and you go, "You gotta be kidding me! What? Well, why do you?" And at the same time, that most rational people, even conservatives, are laughing at this. There are still people out there who are taking this as Bible fact and accepting like every single part of it that's coming out.
There's always going to be like that, but I think there's
it's an alarmingly high minority, admittedly, but an alarmingly large minority. You talk about Afghanistan, you're like, well, why are you talking about Afghanistan?
We've been there, done that, right?
Yeah, you know, we did what we had to. Well, we didn't catch Osama bin Laden, well, that's what we were there for. Yeah, but we did what we had
to. And now we're going to go along to every other country. Iran, Saudi Arabia.
We're not going to go to war with Saudi Arabia.
I'm just saying, dude. They're going to... It's the next logical step, is they're just going to keep looking for him, keep... Killing everybody.
They're not looking for Osama bin Laden.
Kill everybody in our path until...
Nobody's saying they're looking for Osama bin Laden in Iraq. And they're certainly not looking for him in Iran. No one thinks he's in Iran.
Well, actually, a lot of people do.
I haven't heard that. If there is... I don't watch TV, so that I'm missing out on the whole...
No, not TV people.
Really?
It's more like...
The Rush Limbaugh...
Intelligent community people.
When you say intelligent community people, you don't mean like intellectuals, you mean like the intelligence, like CIA intelligence.
Yeah. The whole thing about that ridiculous statement that we were talking about earlier, it does kind of bring to light kind of an issue that does bother me, and that is like the tendency for commentators, for naysayers to really hype on things like that and just kind of gloss over the bigger issue. And that's why I don't really want to talk about statements like that, because I think it does kind of just ignore the whole bigger issue of the concept of having something like Guantanamo Bay. And, I mean, I think it's very dubious. And
I can see that. Because the problem I've had with it from day one is that You take the average. This is someone else. I can't prove this, but I think it's a relatively true statement. If you were to grab the average American and say, who is in Guantanamo Bay? They would say terrorists.
Right.
Which is not true. What they are is soldiers.
Yeah.
Who were taken prisoner during times of war. AKA prisoners of war. Which we have this thing called the Geneva Convention that we supposedly have always abided by and always harped at being above the rest of the world, you know, as far as like, you know, and I think for the most part in American history, we've had some bad, I sound like a, almost like someone, you know, putting out PR for Guantanamo Bay and all that, but we have had a few bad apples over the year, but I think as a whole, like our policy has actually been to maintain the Geneva Convention, and in this case, we kind of have willfully ignored it because there's this perception. And I think that's the genius, again, going back to the propaganda of this administration, that it's been able to, without ever saying, that's the beautiful thing about it, is they never actually said, you know, in the strictest sense, like, wholly gone on record and said, these are terrorists over there, Guantanamo Bay. Somehow it's just become the perception.
That's kind of the whole, that kind of enters into the whole problem I have with it, is that, you know, why Guantanamo Bay? Why not Leavenworth or, you know, a federal prison on the mainland somewhere? And I think the biggest purpose of that is to keep at a minimum the accessibility of the public to have to those prisoners there. And that's always bothered me. Whether it's just getting information out to the public or allowing those people to have representation.
I'm going to say something that's very dubious, too, but you're more than entitled to respond. But generally speaking, I think whenever people respond to allegations, the allegations are usually true. Whereas if they don't respond, the allegations usually turn out not to be true or unfounded. And there's been a heavy, like just a massive amount of work put forth to prove to the rest of the world that everyone's being treated fairly, there's no abuse going on, and everything's peachy keen. And I think that's very telling that even when there's not necessarily, you know, real legitimate allegations, people just kind of whispering in the, you know, the background, that there's still this massive churning of, we've got to make sure everyone's aware that we're treating everybody well.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they were being treated, you know, unusually well. I mean, shit happens in every prison in America. People get beat up, whatever, you know. I mean,
that's true, but it's usually not the wardens that are doing it.
Maybe it is. I don't know. But that's the biggest problem is that I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem I have with it. And the idea that these people don't deserve lawyers or anything like that, that's...
I don't know how I feel about that, because I don't think prisoners of war generally have lawyers. I can think of any time.
Well, they don't even call them prisoners of war, though.
I know that. That's intentional.
Yeah, and it's a very strange status that these people are in. And
they call them, what is it, something combatants?
Yeah, and...
Which is the whole is a synonym for prisoners of war.
But the whole purpose of... You know, the whole status of a prisoner of war is... You know, you keep them until the wars are over. And I don't think that this war is ever going to end. So these people pretty much have life sentences because of that.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that status should be able to be challenged in a court.
And at the same time, you know, people have to frame it in this context. This is the thing people don't think about. It's interesting, the guest said, we talk about Red Dawn. Put it in that context, you know, imagine... You have a bunch of invading people, military, organized, coming to your land, and that's exactly what a lot of these guys were. They were the civilians who just happened to have access to guns, firearms, who decided to fight back at the people who were invading their homes. I'm not saying they're right. I'm not saying any of that. What I am saying is, if you look at it from that perspective, which is what it is, then you have to understand that, hey, maybe there's something else to this that we're just not taking into account.
Club Gitmo.
You know, I gotta say something about that just popped into my head. Rush Limbaugh is going out of his way to establish this as being some as this is no big... In fact, in his opinion, almost get the opinion, if you listen to the show, and I have listened to bits he's done about this, you almost get the opinion that he feels like we are not being strict enough on these people. Like, we need to be harder and crueler and meaner. Okay. There's not a single one of those guys, Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, who would ever have themselves, someone they love, something like anything like that, subjected to that. Not a single one of them. If you were to put them in a position where it was a genuine, maybe even if you asked them right now, they would probably say, yeah. But if they actually knew that it wasn't a hypothetical situation, like you had their family held a gunpoint with right in front of the boat that was about to head off to Cuba.
Well, they're avoiding this year.
Well,
this year.
Yeah, I know.
Focusing on something else that people won't think of the other thing.
And the whole, it's just a few bad apples. It's just like a sorority prank. Like all those sororities where they, sodomize people with chemical torches and kill a couple of them and, rape some boys. Sororities are doing that type of stuff all the time. Sure, yeah. The stuff that didn't really get a whole lot of press but actually happened. And you tell people it happened, they act like you made it up. That didn't actually happen. That's another one. That's the whole ostrich and head in the sand approach.
Yeah.
You tell people, hey, blah, 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 and they go, well, that's not true. You go, well, yeah, it is. Here's the proof. And they go, nah, I don't want to hear it. The facts are not facts to them. You could show people whatever it was. You could show people videotape. George Bush could sign a confession on national TV saying that he... authorized all these horrible things to happen and did all this stuff and now everything that, people like me and you have been saying is true, is 100% true, and they wouldn't believe it. They would deny it. And it boggles my mind. The amount of doublethink that goes on with people these days is just astonishing. This is something that you probably haven't heard. Dunderworks, the track produced by me, the beat and the scratch name. This is Dave with a really cool song. It's called A's Up.
Throw them A's up.
And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Never heard it.
And SMP actually does background vocals on the chorus.
Sweet. So
check it out.
James Brown, same man you used to sample. Oh, he getting paid now. What you blazing foul? You trying to steal that dirt about the South? Cause one bad word, my whole crew will bust you out. Know I'm talking about? Plus we all getting drunk. Ain't nothing you can tell us. Got that fever for the funk. Hip hop to the rock, the pop to the punk. Plus we all speaking country and the punks in the trunk with them candy coated purple sisters all up in the house. But look out for them set trippers filling you with doubt. Put that peace sign out. And you twist the shit around. Thumb to the middle, let them know you hold it down. And if it's just a little, let them know what you about. This one's for my true representatives of the South. My team rolling deep, they can't keep this all out. Cause when the track's over, about to hit the Waffle House. Y'all talking about? Throw the laser, throw the laser. Now everybody throw them up, throw the laser. Throw the laser, throw the laser. Now everybody throw them up. ATL, it's about 150 miles. Straight up I-20, now you know they hold it down. Some call it Hotlanta, I'ma call it A-Town. The city never sleeps, just peeps the background. I ain't gotta tell you about that ATL sound. You can feel it in the Chevys that be rolling downtown. To all my begging people that be creeping around. Late night, 3:30 with them drunk-ass clowns. It's the same situation, it's just a different spot. I can take you to the street where Tupac shot at cops. And way back in the day before a freak Nick stopped. And that's about the time Outkast had it locked. With that Southern playalistic galactic music shit was nice. Throwing up two A's just to represent it twice. Augusta to Atlanta got a serious nightlife. And if you get caught slipping, pay that ultimate price. My crew, B.O.D., you can find it up in Slice. Dirty South, Alabama to the Cackalackas. We nation. Don't you mean me? Of the word country grammar. You represent the A from Mississippi to Savannah.
What you know about that dude?
What's that boxer, arm and hammer?
Everybody got that dude.
That knows about that dude.
That knows about the sweet spots
and southern cooked food.
You catch me at 420.
Find me in a good mood.
Throw the laser. Throw the laser. Let everybody throw him up for the laser. For the laser. For the laser. Now everybody throw him up for the laser. For the laser. For the laser. Now everybody throw him up for the laser. For the laser. For the laser. Now everybody throw him up for the laser. For the laser. For the laser. Now everybody throw him up for the laser. For the laser. For the laser. Now everybody throw him up for the laser. For the laser. For the laser. Now everybody throw him up for the laser. For the laser. For the laser. Now everybody throw him up.
That was Dunderworks track I produced, A's Up. Really dig it.
I'm going to drop a verse on that.
Not bad.
Like, really, really terribly.
Yeah.
I would kill to do that.
Yeah, it would be pretty terrible.
Not bad, meaning bad, but bad, meaning good.
Reviews the world real quick?
Now
you
want
to try to do it real quick with me?
Yeah, one last segment.
Mildred reviews the world.
Battlestar Galactica.
Give us a review.
I liked it more than Sean did. He thought it was generic, but I just didn't see it.
I thought it was predictable in about 355,000 places.
Are we talking? What?
I've only seen the initial
season
miniseries.
Yeah.
Not even season one. It's just the
First miniseries.
The first 4-hour thing.
With are we talking like with
I thought it was incredible.
Dirk Benedict? And
there were very few parts that
the original.
You know what?
Wait a minute.
About the only thing that surprised me was at the end, like, who some of the
Cylons were.
Yeah, the human Cylons. I was like, oh, well, that's kind of surprising.
Yeah.
Aside from that, I was like, yeah, he's going to turn out to be a Cylon. Oh, sure enough, he was. That's an original story. He's going to vindicate, like, his father's fallen dynasty, you know, by, you know, reestablishing that relationship that's been broken all these years and make him proud, finally, you know? Oh, wow, I didn't see that coming.
I was completely shocked at the people actually being Cylons. That they were human human cyborgs or whatever.
See, that bugged me, too.
I thought that was so cool.
I thought that was contrived.
Huh. Oh, well. Interesting perspective.
In fact, I would go beyond the step saying it's contrived. I think it's almost like kind of cheap. Like, oh, well, we could
cheaper. Yeah.
We can't do the, you know, then we have to do the computer
special
graphics.
Effects, you know.
That wasn't really this. I mean, of course, yeah, we had to do them as CGI because who does that makeup and prosthetics?
Come
and,
on.
You know,
how the original, you know.
They looked cool. They look cool now.
No. They look like
well,
guys.
They still have those
they
old
look
Cylons
like,
on the new series.
They look like men wearing toasters.
Man,
they
those,
didn't look cool.
I
don't think they looked cool.
I always thought the Cylons looked cool.
I think the new Cylon ships look cool.
I think
the ships are Cylons
look cool.
Instead of being piloted by Cylons. Which,
see, that doesn't bother me as much.
I mean, why would you need?
Yeah.
Okay.
I really want to know if she's like a chip in his head. You know what I mean? If he's like,
I love the fact
it's such
that
a
you
mystery.
Don't know, so
there's a possibility he might be completely insane too.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
But then, one of the episodes that I saw implied that she sees him while she's, like, a Cylon in real life. And she doesn't know either whether she's going crazy or not or something like that.
Well,
and then there's, like, two of them, and, you know. Let's go to category number two. A song, band, or album?
How about Throwing Copper by Live? No?
No, I mean, that's fine.
Not so much familiar with it, or what?
Is that an album or song?
It's an album.
Yeah.
It's the one with...
How about just Live?
Live the Band?
Yeah.
Okay.
Generic, kind of, to me.
You think so?
I never really...
See, I keep hearing this from people, but, I mean, if you read the lyrics that they write...
Well, you know, I don't do lyrics.
He really seems like a poet.
Unless they're, like, Name of the Giants album? Or something, you know?
Well, you should.
But the music
to
never really.
The music does not stand out as the best stuff ever. But if you read the lyrics, man,
I don't know, because some of the songs they were doing really
get into lyrics.
What it is, people judge Live based off of lightning crashes and dialogue. They don't listen to Pillar of Davidson, which has like these. I mean, that song's amazingly intricate, and the lyrics are awesome.
Yeah, I'll give him one thumbs up. And two thumbs down for being so generic.
People judge them for
they are not
lightning
generic.
Crashes.
Well, I'm gonna give them. My second thumbs down is for just not being able to catch my attention enough to make me listen to those lyrics. I mean,
you're gonna have to listen to Spoiler Davidson.
It's kind of
okay.
Bold,
I will.
Though.
I will. I'll give them one thumbs up for. for the name Live, because it might maybe it's Live.
Maybe it's Evil.
See, they should have mixed it up every once in a while. Like when they're, you know, being introduced on MTV, we'll be like, we're going to be like, we're Live. And then the next time, we're Live. That's what they should have done. So.
Is it two records?
Yeah. White vinyl.
Number three is a book.
A book. Hound of the Baskervilles.
Honestly, it's one of my least favorite Sherlock Holmes stories.
Yeah,
but it's. I think wasn't it his almost his first. I think I know it's his first novel.
It's an early one,
but I don't know if it was his first story. But I there's actually a lot of Sherlock Holmes stories that I thought were kind of sucky, but
really?
Some of them really good. A lot of the ones in the fourth series of books are really
as he gets deeper into it, it's better.
No, they're really bad.
Oh,
because he can't think of any more storylines.
Oh, he's done.
Yeah,
he was tapped out by that point.
None of them were as good as any of the movies by Alfred Hitchcock. Anyway, you know the crazy thing about Sherlock Holmes is he basically is flying blind on mere coincidence. I mean,
not
the deductions that guy makes was like. Well, the mud on your shoes leads me to believe that you recently crossed the mud pass of Africa, which explains the suburbs.
Well, that's like modern forensics. I mean,
it's nothing like modern forensics. They don't go around making deductions. Deductions are like the last thing that they do.
I watched a Forensic Files just last night where they caught a murder based on the mud on her shoes.
They don't look at it and go, well, based on that right there. What they do is they take a sample of the mud, they run it through the chemical, you know, then they take all these samples, all these other mud places.
I saw one.
Sherlock Holmes did the same kind of thing. He just couldn't take it to the level that modern
I saw Forensic Files where they found a body in a plastic bag. Okay? So they take the plastic bag and they figure out, okay, this kind of plastic bag, this size and shape, is only used to fit over automobile seats. So they figure out where the automobile seat, you know, where the newest kind of seat that would fit this size of bag, you know, and there's only one place. So they go through everybody who got a new seat from the one place in the nearest area, and they deduced through that list, they found whose plastic bag, who bought the car seat with the bag on it and put the body in it.
See, the thing about Sherlock Holmes is that he lived in a much smaller world. Like, his knowledge, he was extremely knowledgeable about London and, you know... England around there, but you know, other than that, there wasn't really a need to be that knowledgeable. I mean, occasionally he would have to solve some murder about some baron from Persia, you know, Prussia or whatever, and he'd suddenly be very knowledgeable about Prussian whatever. But you know, a lot of times it is far fetched, but at the time. You got to remember, these ideas were actually very new, and modern forensics does owe a lot to the ideas of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes. So,
Hounds of the Baskervilles, or the Hound of the Baskervilles.
Yeah. It's clever, but I think there's better stories.
Well, name a better Sherlock Holmes story.
What's your favorite?
Murders in the River Moor.
Huh?
Is that... Who's that? That's not a show. That's Edgar
Allan Poe. Yeah, I'll give it, like, 2 thumbs up. And maybe 1 thumbs down for not being the best. Next category is a video game.
Have you played Black?
I did play Black. I checked it out, actually. The only thing I don't like about it is that it is on a console, because I don't like playing first-person shooters on consoles, usually.
You'd rather have it on your computer?
I'd rather have the control of the mouse, controlling the reticule.
It'll probably come out.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll come
out. No, it doesn't really matter. I mean,
there's a hundred of them.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't that impressive. It wasn't as realistic as I hoped, because I do prefer the realistic first-person shooters, like...
It was one of the more realistic ones.
Rainbow Six.
And you shoot a guy in the face, you got a gun at his face, and there's no blood. What? You pow, and he falls down. His helmet flies off. No blood.
Well...
Is it rated mature anyway?
I don't remember what it was rated, but...
I think it's rated mature, but no. Nobody bleeds. You know,
the physics on that are a little harder. I can accept that.
What?
Blood and stuff?
Blood splatter?
Yeah.
Food.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch!
Yeah, there you go. Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
There used to be 3 chefs. Now there's 1.
Seriously? I don't know. I think it's kind of nasty.
Not human,
like,
are you?
Well, you know the cereals I like.
Sugary.
I like the boring cereals.
It's not
like,
even that sugary.
It's sugary. It's covered in sugar.
I bet if you look on the ingredients, it's either ingredient number 1 or ingredient number 2.
Sugar, 855.57 grams.
I can eat half a box.
I mean, I think even on like Crispix, sugar's like number 3.
There's hardly any sugar in Crispix at all.
Oh, you'd be surprised how much sugar they put in some of those cereals.
Ice cream, that's what I do.
Yeah, but I always have to cover with Crispix and sugar to...
Maybe 1. Because, I mean, it's cinnamony. And I like cinnamon.
And toasty.
But 2, because it's just way too sugary, and sugar. the milk gets all...
The milk turns into sugar milk.
And nasty, and it, like, cuts the roof of your mouth and
stuff.
If
you get to the bottom of the box, that's when Captain Crunch. Dude. That's when it's stale. You shouldn't eat it then.
Because he's looking at me weird, but does it, like, cut the roof of your mouth and stuff? No.
Only when it's old.
And I'm telling you, man, the best thing in the world.
How can you tell old from the news?
Because it cuts the top of your mouth. It gets hard.
I'm telling you, man, the best thing in the world is that last is the last.
Oh, you get that big pile of dust. It's all sugar.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's awesome.
I know. Like, you get all the little crumbs of this pieces and the big mound of sugar. Why don't you just pour the sugar?
And I hate to tell you,
straight out of the bag.
Whenever I eat Cinnamon Toast Crunch, it always seems like it's soggy too quick. Mm. So I don't know where this cutting the roof of your mouth thing comes from.
It's got to be something else. I'm telling you, Cinnamon Toast Crunch is old. And when it gets old, it gets gross.
Mine never lasts long enough to get old.
One thumbs up, and I'll give it 3 thumbs down.
You leave
that's a sad travesty. Right,
you leave a box of it at the lake. Next summer, when you go back up there, it's going to cut the roof of your mouth if you try to eat it.
Yeah, but then it's probably turned into, like, laminate.
Like spiders come out of the...
Okay. A place.
What about that new planet?
That new planet?
Which one?
They have
the newest discovered.
Xena.
Is that what it's... Xena?
They have one named Xena. They had one named after the Inuit...
There's like 3 of them.
They had one with a strange...
Goddess of
I'm talking about in our solar system.
So am I.
The one with the... one that just had like some numbers.
They all start out with numbers.
Yeah, numbers, yeah.
How about we just review extra... What they call them. They have a special name for them now, but I can't remember what it is. But I'll say this. I never considered Pluto a planet.
What do you think it is?
It's just a extra, whatever it's called.
It's just an asteroid. That's all.
That's what happened when they started arguing this. People said, yeah, well, if that's true, then Pluto can't be a planet either. And then they said, yeah, you're right. So the whole thing's been up in the air. I'm of the belief that they are planets because in the strictest dictionary sense of the term, if they are orbiting around our sun in a very fixed orbit, and they all
Well, that's just it. Pluto's orbit is much more erratic than the other 8 planets.
It's still fixed.
Every orbit is fixed. I mean, every orbit in the world, in the universe, follows a fixed. Comets follow a fixed orbit. They're just highly erratic and.
That's probably subjective.
Well, yeah. Obviously, the line that we decide to draw is
that's not arbitrary. It's a paradigm, either.
It's a paradigm.
I think a lot of the reason why Pluto is considered a planet is because it was discovered by an American. And that that's the only planet discovered by an American, and there's a lot of pride in that. It was only discovered, I think, in 1931.
Wow.
But one of these extra, planetoids that they discovered is much larger than Pluto, and that's really thrown the whole definition up in the air.
Well, also,
which is fine with me, because I think Pluto needs to be kicked out of
one of them's really big too, like bigger than most of the planets. Not as big as Jupiter.
It's not like a gas planet, right?
Like the one that's in like the wild orbit is real big.
Yeah, it's green too, which is weird.
It's Endor. It's the home of the Ewoks.
Yeah, here's one definition they call it is just a minor planet.
A minor planet. Yeah. So in other words, these are all major planets?
Well, we've got 8 major planets, and then there's plenty of little things floating out there that are.
Yeah, but some of those minor are not planets. Planetoids even.
With things like the asteroid belt and stuff.
Yeah. I would think if you did it, I mean, this is science we're talking about, there could be a mathematical cutoff. You take the mass of the center object, in this case the sun, and then you divide that by, a length plus the mass of the specific object orbiting it, and that would create some formula to establish whether it is a planet or not.
Oh, the Sedna was the Inuit one.
Sedna.
Yeah, I like that name, and I like that planet.
You want
to
go there?
So if you had to review these planetoids...
Yeah, just in general.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what criteria I should use. I mean, I think it's exciting.
Not a lot of controversy in
astronomy.
You'd be surprised.
Not a lot of, fist fight.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of guys that have been gazing at telescopes for, 20 years jumping on each other and...
They're planets! They're not planets! Fuck you!
I'll kill you!
See? Not I'll kill you. I'll kill you!
Wilford Brimley, dude. Was it him?
It does make it more forceful when you drop the double L.
It does.
I'll kill you!
That's great.
You've seen this movie.
The orange brick guy?
Huh?
The hand from the Addams Family.
The hand?
It's the hand.
I should recognize the hand.
From the Addams Family?
Yeah.
It's the thing.
So, I'll give these wannabe planets, I'll give them 2 thumbs up for trying.
Yeah, the people who live there are going to be really upset when they hear this.
They want to be planets, so I think that's good.
And if we're throwing Pluto in the bunch, I'm going to give it 2 thumbs down.
That's a solid review.
Pluto sucks. Okay, the next category is a British Royal.
British Royal. Who's the prince that they've given so much press here lately?
I think you're talking about...
William?
Yeah.
I think he's William.
The offspring of him and Diana. Yeah. The first one.
Yeah, the oldest.
Not the ugly one. I'll give Prince William... I'll give him 3. I think he's going to be a good... Whatever.
He could be the king.
Well...
You could be the king.
Charles is
could have been a contender.
Charles is definitely gonna become a king, but he's so old that
he won't be good until he starts cutting people's heads off.
Yeah,
they need to bring that.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I don't mean I don't. I just
would he be allowed to anything?
Just a random.
Just a random.
That, they've weakened the position so much that they should bring that back.
I wonder if he's allowed to.
Like the king or queen of England should be allowed to cut the head off any English person or any person.
But they don't have the power now.
In either current territory.
They could start with Tony Blair.
Well, did they lose the power, or did they just gain the decency not to do it?
No. They don't have the power. Parliament has the power.
But I mean, the office of Prime Minister wasn't even established until the year 1905 or so.
See, Parliament's too busy getting involved in sex scandals to cut anybody's heads off.
sex scandal in Parliament that I don't know about?
Yeah, gee, the Parliament's not known for any sex scandals. You apparently don't know anything about Parliament. Lately? Oh, God. That's a den of iniquity right there, let me tell you. Huh.
It's not that many, but they have had, like, a few outstanding things. They had one of the, they had kind of, like, remember that NXS guy?
Yeah.
Kind of like that, Michael times two.
Yeah.
The whole choking himself. But this guy was also, like, wearing, like, a garter and stuff. That's the thing.
They just don't have sex scandals. They have, like, really bizarre sex scandals. And they have them way more than our... Well, actually, they probably have as many as we do, but ours just don't make the front page.
Right.
Like that whole Monaco.
Yeah, we're on to...
No, I'm talking about, like...
Ultra.
As many as there probably actually are, is all I'm saying.
Probably. An event.
The election.
Which one?
Of Bush versus Gore.
Oh, man, that was awesome. Everybody was all like, oh, why is this happening? This shouldn't be happening. This is a crisis. And I was like, eating it up. It was like, oh, this is a crisis.
I remember about the fifth or sixth week, I started to hate freedom. I started to think, like, man, this whole voting
process. Yeah, we look like we can't even elect a president. I remember feeling that way.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, we look stupid to the whole world right now.
It got so frustrating because you had these people like, you know, you had the dimple chat and the hanging chat, and their job became interpreting these votes, and I thought that was just like, that to me was a crisis.
That's dumb.
That to me was legitimately where... that whole thing took a turn. Until that point, the whole, you know, I don't think the votes were counted properly, blah, 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 blah. You know, whatever. But when it got to that where they were saying, we're going to interpret what these people are saying, that really started to piss me off most of all. Because
yeah, if it's not punched, throw it away. Move on.
That is
go.
Not their
if you can't do
job.
It right, forget it.
And we're talking about people who, these are volunteers for the polling places who are doing this, okay? And... have you ever looked at the volunteers for these polling places? They don't strike me as having the best eyesight in the world. Most of them are, if they're lucky, in their mid-60s.
Well, they had, you know, triple checks to that kind of stuff. And, you know, that never pissed me off like it did you. I don't know.
How about,
Here we go.
Botox.
Botox?
Yeah. The injections.
Yeah. It's not really my thing. Worked for John Kerry. It's kind of gross, really. I mean, I'll give it 2 thumbs down.
Any thumbs up?
No.
Oh. So just plain 2 thumbs down.
Yeah.
The idea of injecting poison into your face.
It's a gross name.
Yeah, it's got the word... that's something I never figured out. It's got the word tox in it.
Yeah.
Which implies toxin or toxic, which is words you just don't hear in, like, supposedly positive medical procedures. You know, so last category is a wild card, which in this case Chuck said the Joker.
Uh-huh. From like
they
Batman.
He didn't enlighten us as to whether he meant the Joker from Batman or maybe the Joker from a pack of cards.
Yeah. Well, supposedly, like in the next Batman movie, they're going to have the Joker.
Is Chris Nolan doing that one too?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's not going to be Jack Nicholson. But, you know, Jack Nicholson was awesome as the Joker.
Yeah, but even now, it looks... it's good. I don't think that movie's aged all that well. Especially in the light of the new movie.
See, that's interesting, because it wasn't... it was done in this weird, kind of nebulous time period.
Oh, yeah,
I couldn't really tell. So I'm not quite sure how it could not age well.
The kitschiness of it seems to be something. That's about it, really. The movie hasn't really aged all that well. And I can't really think... I mean, I can't detach the role from that movie. So
what about, like, I mean, he's kind of established like an established character. He has a life outside the movie, though. I didn't ever read the comic books.
Yeah.
I can think of the Adam West, you know, Batman series, too.
Yeah, I mean, I never was into anything other than the movie, really. So, 2 thumbs up.
Maybe thumbs down?
Maybe 1 for not aging very well. Being kind of kitschy and...
so you're basing that entirely off the Tim Burton Batman film.
He said it was up to me, didn't he?
Yeah, he did say it was up to you.
I could have chosen
the card.
Well, I mean, the Joker has been interpreted several times. Admittedly, not just in like, there's the animated series.
Yeah.
No, which, not you know, familiar. Who plays him in the animated series?
You're
going to be surprised when I tell you. Mark Hamill.
Not that surprised.
Really? Wow.
I mean, he needs a gig, you know?
Yeah.
He needs work. It's not doing much.
So, I mean, you know, you got Mark Hamill, you got Jack Nicholson. Was it Cesar Romero? It was Cesar Romero.
Was it?
Who did him in the you know, in the really corny TV show.
He did that TV show.
And there was a movie, too, which has that great scene where he's running down the street with a bomb. So, there you have it. Motor Reviews the World.
Yeah.
And thanks a lot for having Chuck on for the show, Chuck. Any shout-outs?
Well, I wanted to say hello to Jessica. Hey, Jessica. She's the only one that listens to it, so. I've got a shout-out to my man, Shiro Akaishi. Remember him? Shout-out to Al Gore. Keep on trucking.
Big shout-out to Dan Warren. Give a shout-out to my family.
Okay. I'll allow it.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks to Ghost and Jackal, of course, for their contributions. And a big shout-out to DJ Richie Rich for being here last week. And a shout-out to Dave 420 for, you know,
showing up.
For wanting to show up and having, you know, vehicular problems that prevented him from doing so.
Yeah.
Hi, kids. Please remember to send all emails to SirMildredPierce@gmail.com and EBAOFVN@gmail.com. Thanks.
And so now we're going to leave you with some scratchy noises, courtesy of yours truly, and enjoy.
Cool.
Number one zombie movie, Kazam, features Shaquille O'Neal, who we all know is a flesh-eating zombie.